go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 49 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I have slave owner energy that needs to actively be suppressed. Whoa, did I just say that aloud? I believe I did. Please allow me some time to elaborate on that statement so that my employer does not fire me ASAP. Now, when I say I have slave owner energy, what I'm getting at here is I'm watching the Olympics and the lead up to the Olympics, and I'm a big fan of the Olympics and basketball. Now, if I'm the owner of the New York Knicks, James Dolan, that's a bad example because the Knicks do not have any players, I believe, on the U.S. basketball team. Anyways, let's say you're the owner of an NBA basketball team, and you're paying your best player $50+ million a year to play for your team, and you turn on the Olympics and you see that $50 million player playing for his country. There's no way in hell I would ever allow that to happen as an owner. Right away, I'd be calling up the Olympics. I'd be saying, hey, get my player off the court. Then I would call my player that I'm paying $50 million to, and I'd go, hey, buddy, go to our practice facility, learn how to shoot a three-pointer, and I'll see you the first day of training camp. Thank you very much. From an owner's perspective, how the hell did they allow this to happen? As a fan, as a pleb who I am, a man on the ground level, walking the street, I can't get enough of it. I love basketball. I love summer basketball. Watching all these superstar athletes go at it in this tournament from a fan experience is lovely. From an owner's experience, it's got to be jaw-dropping, terrifying. How can you pay a guy $300+ million a year, then allow him to go play in this little tournament for NBC, and you're not getting any cut of that? As an owner, I would owner's meeting right away. I'd stand up and go, fuck your country, fuck your nationalism, fuck your pride. He's playing for me and me only in our jersey, and we're going for an NBA championship. I could give two shits about your little gold medal and tradition every 4 years. Get out of here with that. I could understand the Dream Team, the original Dream Team with Jordan and Drexler and Barkley and Pippen and Bird and Magic. I get that. Should have been a one-time thing. After it should have shut it down after 92 and gone right back to amateurs from an owner's perspective. And that's what I mean when I say I have slave owner energy. Sometimes I view things from the employer's perspective more so than the employee's perspective. Even though my entire life I have been either an employee or unemployed. I do not understand how these owners have allowed this to happen, because all these guys care about is the bottom line, baby. This is America. This is capitalism. And how they're allowed to risk, their players are allowed to risk their health in this very competitive tournament in another country without your training facility and your doctors and your physical therapist and your surgeons nearby. As an owner, I'd be pounding my chest like, no, not going to happen. Not going to happen. I don't care if I'm shamed for it. From an owner's perspective, it's mind bending. I'll never be able to understand how they allow this to happen or why they allow this to happen. But as a fan, thank you for your stupidity. With basketball, I've also You know, I was watching the Summer League, the Vegas Summer League with the guys who were trying to make their NBA, the main NBA rosters. And I was amazed by the sneakers, not how they looked, just the technology today with basketball and running sneakers. They're so much support, and it seems like they're so lightweight. And I remember when I first started watching basketball, very, you know, the Olympic team, the Dream Team, and even before that. You think about Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. They played about a decade because they wore those flat Converse sneakers without any support to them. So they could only play a decade before they broke down. But you see the advancement in technology to today, where even these non-NBA players, like any kid playing rec league basketball, has these super sneakers that make them jump higher and have more bounce to them and more ankle support. And all I think about is high heels. As I mentioned last week, I love high heels. I love the way they look. But I do understand why women, babes, do not like wearing them, because they hurt. What we should do as a country is take that shoe technology that we have with basketball sneakers and put it towards high heels. Because if we had that support where it was more comfortable to wear high heels, the babes could be a whore for so much longer. A stripper's career could last for another half decade if her heels had the proper support that I do think we have the technology for. So come on, Nike. Come on, Reebok. Come on, Adidas. Let's get the technology there so the babes can wear the high heels out on the street more often than they do. I'm so sick of these flats. Again, I am not for slave owners. At my core, I am an abolitionist, have always been one since even before the Civil War. I've always been anti-slavery and will always continue to be anti-slavery. I just want to reiterate that so you don't think otherwise of me. Let's get into something where maybe not so controversial. Actually, this one is pretty controversial. I found this one on the subreddit Stealth Camping, a local stealth camper. So let's find out what this is all about. My lease is going to be ending soon. I'd rather do some stealth camping for a bit to save on bills. There's a trail with people who have had their tents set up right by the trail for years now and never get told to leave. It's been a few months since I've been there. I should see if they're still around. I can't find any laws on the trail site that talk about camping. I don't know if it's illegal or no one gives a fuck. I'd consider setting up a tent in that area, but I'd be more concerned about turf wars with other campers than hiding from the law. I don't know. It's an exciting idea. And it seems like the repercussions aren't the worst if you do happen to get caught. Sometimes you can read a Reddit post and you know so much about the person without knowing anything about the person. What I'm getting at here is this is a white guy. You read this post, he's talking about stealth camping. He goes on camping websites. He's observing campers in the wild in this densely populated metropolitan area. That's white man logic right there. That's white man logic, probably in his mid-20s to his mid-30s. It all depends on your state in life, where you're at in life. If you're married, if you have a wife, if you have kids, if you have a mortgage, if you have bills outstanding, if you have a lot of student debt, I don't think you can do stealth camping because you have too much responsibility. Now, if you don't, if you're a loner, if you don't have a wife, if you don't have kids, if you've paid off all your debts, yeah, go ahead. Now, the B-man, I would take that actual tent and any other electronics you have, whether it be a TV, a computer, a laptop, your phone. I'd sell all those off first before I entertained stealth camping. But if you don't want to do that, or you don't have any electronics, then hey, go live your postmodern caveman life and pitch your tent on the side of the road. Live and let live. Now, what I will say that, like, I understand where you're coming from with it. See, like, paying your $1,800 the first of every month to your landlord to pay your rent, that is soul crushing. I understand how you want to escape that. So the mindset you do have, and maybe it's just because I am a white guy and I'm a loner, maybe that's why I do empathize with you a little bit, or I see your wavelength of where you're at. That is a soul crushing activity every month to do that and to see that money. Bye-bye, $1,800. Nice knowing you. I need to go sign in to work tomorrow morning. I understand you wanting to escape the matrix and get off the grid. I'm never going to fault you for that. The problem is, for me, it really does come down to also where your location, your state of life, and also your location. Like, if you're living in a location where the weather is that cooperates with tent lifestyle, and you want to, let's say you want to, when your lease is up, let's say every March, April, May, you do the tent life and you save maybe, I don't know, $5,000, $6,000 in rent money. It actually does make a lot of sense to me. And I am kind of jealous that I didn't think of this idea first. Now, you got to understand, though, that does make you, even the most frugal people who are kind of going to look at you sideways. We all know those people who will tell you, hey, why are you buying your $7 latte at Starbucks every morning? Like, stop doing that, save that money, and within 3 years you'll have that $5,000. Now you're taking that mindset to the extreme where you're saying, well, fuck it, I just won't pay rent for 3 months and I'll get that $6,000 in 3 months instead of 6 years. So I mean, you are frugal, you're in a frugal square is what you are. Again, I'm judging you, and that's something you're going to have to get used to. Because if you are going to do this off-grid lifestyle, the people in your life, the people you encounter in life when you have to come back onto the grid to get supplies, we're all going to look at you crookedly. Because when we associate as grid people, and I'm a grid person, I love AC, I love showers, I love having a bed. The thought of of sleeping under the stars, it's like, hey, I ain't prehistoric, baby. This is the 21st century. The B man, I want what life has available for me. I want a toilet that I can flush after I pee. But you got to understand, us grid people, we view all of you off-grid people as a Ted Kavinsky... What's his name? Ted Kavinsky type person, the Unabomber. We view you as the Unabomber. We mistrust every person who's living off the grid. We come in contact with you when we're walking the trail. We're as scared as if you were like a mountain lion. We turn away, we run away, we take our kids, we take our pet, and we just go back to our car. We go back to the parking lot. We want nothing to do with you. And so you got to understand that going in, that's how people are going to treat you, and you shouldn't judge them for treating you that way. If you are employed, any social event that your colleagues put together, whether you have like a Friday happy hour, they're going to cease to invite you to them, and you're going to have to accept that because nobody wants the tent living guy trying to bum a drink off of them after work on Friday. And as for the turf wars, you're on to something with that. You really are on to something with that. I used to work and live in New York City, and there were lots of times when I would see two homeless people fighting for a street corner. Because there are some corners that are hot where you could get a lot of tips, you get a lot of money and food from people. And I saw lots of physical fist fights over, it was usually like subway stops. Like, you know, the stairs that go down to the subway, like usually that was like a key spot for homeless people to get money from, civilians. So there were turf war fights. And it does make sense because if you're homeless, you have nothing to lose. You have your one spot. If someone comes and takes it, hey, let's fight for it. There's no repercussions for me if the police come because they can't take anything away. I am a big believer, before you get into a fist fight, which I've never been in one, both parties should have to fill out a questionnaire where you can answer questions about your employment, about your insurance, about your mortgage, about your car payments, about your educational level, about your family life. Do you have kids? Do you have health care? Do you have a 401k? Because the fewer things you have checked off, the less willing I am to engage in a fist fight with you. Because the less you have, the less you have to lose, and you're not the person I want to be going with. And when you're living the tent life, the off-the-grid life, you don't have much to lose. So, yeah, there's going to be some wars. If you try putting your tent up too close to somebody else's tent, or you start, inching in on his land where he gets his food from or his water from, yeah, he's going to try to bust your ass. And there's a good chance he's going to pull out a knife and you're going to get stabbed. So my advice would be not to go to the trail. Try to find somewhere else. I found another stealth, stealth camper who's posting up right outside of a Lowe's, like hidden right next to the rail. Do something like that. Find a plaza where there's a lot of shrubs behind the plaza, or maybe right near a highway exit where there's a gas station right off the exit, like where there's a bunch of woods right there. Somewhere where you're secluded, but you can also get to a gas station or a convenience store where you could get your goods for the day. The more I think about it, that's probably a high target area for the tent stealth campers. But hey, if you're going to go this lifestyle, you're going to have to, you're going to have to bob and weave and play a little hide and seek and find a good spot of your own where you're not near any of the other campers. More advice I give you is treat this like prison lifestyle where live a life of discretion. I don't speak much. I don't interact with the other tent livers. Don't get into gambling debt with any of them. Don't get addicted to drugs. Because once you owe another stealth camper money, he owns your ass. And he's getting everybody on your ass. And you're going to get hit with a rock and crush your skull. So stay to yourself. Be a loner. Pack lightly. Don't make much noise. And save up 6G for the next 3 months. Let us know how it goes. Let's get into some photos now. The B-Man's going to tell you, there's nothing hotter in these streets right now than a guy living out of his van, especially if he happens to look like a Hawaiian surfer. The babes swoon to these guys in their vans. I was giving it a lot of thought, and I think much more so than their looks and their ruggedness, the babes are attracted to these men in their vans because their lifestyle is not banal. They're on the run. It's exciting. They're going from campsite to campsite. They don't know where they're going to be at the end of each day. There's something about that lifestyle that makes the babes' pubic area a tingle, and they want to feel what that's like. I know a guy who he's actually living that stealth camping lifestyle. And the only thing I'll say is that make sure you're checking in on your loved ones as often as you can, because it is like prison. It's a dangerous lifestyle. And all those people who aren't off the grid, are living that quote-unquote normal lifestyle, that they like to hear from you every once in a while to make sure you haven't been knifed by another stealth camper. Hopefully none of you get knifed tonight. I was scrolling through Reddit, and I found this on the Mountain Dew subreddit. How much dew do you drink? I tried to give up soda completely about a couple weeks ago. When my stash was gone, I promised myself I would not bring any more dew into the house. I saw an amazing sale on soda, and this tub let me know there were new flavors, so I could not resist. I only drink maybe 3 cans a day. Update, you are awesome beasts. Now I feel like I have an addiction. Sometimes we can't judge a person and whether that person has an addiction or not by how much of the substance a person is having, but rather the language they use when they're referring to the substance they may or may not be addicted to. And you referring to Mountain Dew as your stash tells me you have a severe addiction to Mountain Dew. So much that you need to go to rehab. And the B-Man, I ain't talking about rehab in Santa Barbara where all the celebrities go, where it's 8 weeks of mimosas and yogas and afternoons by the beach. No. You need to go to an out-of-state rehab, probably somewhere in Florida, a town we've never heard of, where the humidity is oppressive and you're dealing with people who have missing teeth that hopefully are not stolen by their dentist. You just need to be, it's almost like Hard Knocks, Scared Straight, boot camp type rehab, because that is what you need. The fact that you refer to it as a stash, meaning you have Mountain Dew different places in your house. You obviously have it in your refrigerator. You probably have it by your laptop in your bedroom. You probably have a few 12 packs in your garage. What I know about Mountain Dew people, and I do know of a lot of Mountain Dew people, even though I am not a Mountain Dew guy. When I was coming up, I was more of I liked grape and orange soda. Obviously, Coca-Cola was a big one when my parents were able to afford it. When I was out with friends, birthday parties, it wasn't Mountain Dew was the special soda. It was more Surge, I believe that was the name of the soda, like Surge and Volt with the big green can with the splatter on it. Those were the ones that made my dick hard, and I knew I was going to get in a sugar coma when I had one of those. But I did dabble, though, in Mountain Dew. It was more the last time I fucked with Mountain Dew was probably the late 90s, and I'm telling you, straight up, their Mountain Dew was fentanyl before fentanyl was a thing. Like you would drink 3 Code Red Mountain Dews while doing an overnight session of GoldenEye 007 on your Nintendo 64, and you'd walk to school the next morning with open lesions on your cheek. That's how powerful Code Red Mountain Dew was back in the day. The kids who would bring Code Red Mountain Dew to the lunchroom, you would see the Mountain Dew fiends would just kind of come out of the alley, and they'd be like, can I trade with you? I'll give you my lunch money. It was a scene. Because Code Red, for some reason, it was a hard flavor to find. And I don't know. Like you said, there's a lot of new flavors, which kind of is intriguing my mind. And it's also like, I know I can't fuck with Mountain Dew, because if I have one, they are delicious, and I might become an addict like you, so I'm just going to pretend you didn't tell me there's a whole new burst of flavors out there in the Dew game, so I'm very upset at you for telling me that. But yeah, Code Red, back in the day, that was fentanyl, that was like fentanyl dipped in a Four Loko, a 24-ounce can of Four Loko. That's how powerful Mountain Dew was. And when I was in high school, everybody knew who the Mountain Dew guys were. And it was always guys. Surprisingly, though, I do like Mountain Dew guys because they are smart. And I'll tell you why. They're very intelligent. They know they're up to date with politics and what's going on in the news because they're up all night. Mountain Dew people, their bedtime is sunrise. And unlike alcoholics and coke heads and the doobie heads and whatever, all the other druggies, they remember everything that happens during the night. So they're very well-informed citizens, and they're almost always experts with computer. A lot of them probably, I'm guessing, went into IT because they always played computer games all night and they kind of had their own terminology. Very, very smart people, but oddly enough, not motivated employees. I had an employee at a company I worked for who drank Mountain Dew. This was like the 2015, 16, 17 range, overweight Mountain Dew. His cubicle was a disaster. It was a nuclear scene. He always had Mountain Dews. It was chugging them every day for lunch. And he was your typical Bernie Sanders bro. He was the type of guy you'd find on the anti-work subreddit, very into socialism. Mountain Dew drinkers and capitalism don't go hand in hand. You won't see many people chugging a Mountain Dew telling you the virtues of capitalism. It's not what it is. So oddly enough, yeah, they're well informed. They could talk about current events forever, but I would never hire a Mountain Dew addict to work for me here at Verbal Graffiti or with us here at Verbal Graffiti. It's an interesting breed, the Mountain Dew person. Are you an addict? It's tough to say because not all addicts are created equal, especially when it comes to soda drinkers. Now they're telling us you have 3 Mountain Dews every day. So let's do the math. 3 times 7, that's 21 Mountain Dews. That's a ton of empty calories. I'm going to make an educated guess and say you are not a size 32 waist. You're probably north of 40 in that regard. And the fact that you're seeking out sales, that's another thing about soda people. Soda people, they get giddy for a sale. I remember my dad. My dad was a big Coca-Cola guy. When there was a sale at Stop and Shop, that's the grocery store in this area, they need to put limits on how many 12 packs of soda you can buy when they put out a sale. Because we all know a 12 pack of soda can be like $7, $8. When they have a sale, they'll limit it maybe to like 2 or 3 12 packs. My dad, he would go in, get the limit, put it in his car and go back inside and buy another 2 or 3. And he'd come home with a complete trunk full of 12-pack Coca-Colas. He'd have like 15 12-packs. It'd fill up like the entire basement. And I know he's not alone because you soda fiends, you go giddy for a sale. And I'm not judging because if there were ever sales on beer, I would be the same way. Yeah, but you're drinking 3 a day. Going cold turkey is impossible. Mountain Dew, you know, it's harder than cocaine. It's harder than fentanyl. It's harder than the gas. What you got to do is slowly edge yourself off of the Dew. So instead of having 3 a day, try to have 2 a day for the next month. The following month, have 1 a day. And try to get to the point where you only have Mountain Dew on the weekend, and maybe try, and then after that, get to the diet Mountain Dew. Like the way I view it, if someone has 3 diet Cokes a day, is that good for that person? No. But if he or she's coming from a point where she was drinking 6 regular Coca-Colas a day, that is great progress. And that should be, we should cheer that person on and tell them to keep going. So yeah, try to slowly wean yourself off. Going cold turkey, Mountain Dew, that might actually put you in a coma. it might give you a cardiac arrest. I don't advise doing that. It's a miracle that you were able to survive 2 weeks without Mountain Dew. So to you, to your Mountain Dew crew, and to everybody else, go suck a fat one.